Rick Tittle, you done broke my heart, but I still take you back. You hella fine.
Thanks, Clay Aiken, and welcome back to the
that,
show.
I will attest, was really Clay Aiken.
Very well. Hal Sparks is with us.
Yes.
Movie star, comedian, and more, raconteur, as he said, bon vivant, and you can see him at Cobb's tonight, and you can see him also Saturday and Sunday as well. Now, I want to get to your relationship with the Buckos in Pittsburgh in just a second, but during the break, you know, I heard a little bit of the Indian guy, and I'm just wondering, you said you had some sort of, not going off in these long, you know, but you have one line.
I love impersonations, but I was never able to muster up more than one sentence as each person, you know, and that's, you can't really be an impersonator, you know, or impressionist on, you know, and so, like, I could, tons of people can do Sean Connery, but I could only do one line, which was from Hunt for the Red October, which is, better if I arrange the target, one ping only.
That's not bad.
Right. And then, and I can't, I'll bleep out the word, but like Bruce Willis is a hard one, you know, and it struck me. But from Die Hard, I can only go, glass, who gives it about glass?
That was a good little blip there, yeah.
Thanks. And I mean, I could kind of do, you know, Jesse Ventura, because I love that guy, because every time you turn around, he's in the, you know, I discovered a ladder at the bottom of the Minnesota airport when I was governor that leads to a group where the Pentavalent meets once a week to determine how the world would be just, you know, that guy.
That's great. Now, of course, in Terminator, you know, I won't do it, but I ain't got time to bleed. How would he say it?
Oh, you mean Alien,
Predator.
Predator, yeah. Ain't got time to bleed.
That's not bad. All right, now.
Spits.
Hal, you...
Then you cooked up the story and dropped the six of us into the meat grinder, which is the other, that's the Schwarzenegger line I could do.
Yeah.
That and the screaming at the end of Total Recall. which is really pretty much the quintessential Schwarzenegger acting.
You killed my family. You took my father's sword.
There's a lot of and all that stuff.
Well, even Kindergarten Cop. It's not a tumor.
It's not a tumor. Who's your daddy and what does he do?
All right. Now, speaking of movie roles, Dude, Where's My Car? Of course, the Ashton Kutcher
vehicle.
Tour de Force vehicle, yes. And
let us not forget Sean William Scott.
I've had him on the show.
Yes.
He's you know, real good guy.
Yep.
And but you had a character in there named Zoltan, and you had these bubble wrap dudes, and you were going to go to space where you were going to find cool aliens that like you.
Yes, right.
Yeah. And but you had a little Z move with your hand that you created.
Yeah, right.
Now, how on earth did this get developed by the, you know, taken in by the Pittsburgh Pirates fan base to say, let us end our suffering, our two decades long of suffering?
Right. It wasn't actually the fans. It was the players.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, they were watching Dude, Where's My Car in the playhouse, you know, when in between, like, practices that were not going particularly well or something. And it became a gag that they were doing to them, you know, between themselves. Mm. Like, they kept doing Zoltan as a joke. And then one of them hit a base hit and made it to base. It hadn't for a while or something along those lines. And turned to the other guys on the team and did the little move.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they started hitting. And they started, you know, making, like, they get to third base and they'd Zoltan. Somebody hit a home run. Zoltan. And it became this running gag. And I have a Pirates jersey with Zoltan on it because I threw out the pitch at a Pirates game.
That's funny you say that at PNC because, like, listen, you know, like, I'm not Fonzie. My name is Henry Winkler. You go out there, here's your jersey. Zoltan.
No,
but you're
care.
Like, I'm there for that,
right? Oh, hell yeah. I would so much rather
you did
have.
Did the Z, did the 360 with
yeah,
the
right.
Z.
Yeah, right. Oh, totally. I did it from the mound and all that stuff. It was terrific. And I, here's the thing. If I want a Pirates jersey with my name on it, I'll get one eventually in my career. I'm not in a hurry. There's a lot of people in a hurry to be recognized like
right.
It'll never happen again. I got news for you. I'm going to be one of those old bastards in the industry. I'm going to be George Burns or Hume Cronin or, you know, like these kind of guys, Burgess Meredith. You know what I mean? Like when they remake Rocky with some young new guy in the year 2027, I'm going to be, you're going to eat lightning, you're going to crap thunder. I don't care. And I'm going to get an Oscar for it and you can all suck it. I'm in no hurry.
But, you know, what's funny is that 2 years ago, the same thing happened more or less in Oakland here. Coco Crisp started doing this Bernie lean dance, and it caught on. The A's won the division. They brought in Terry Kaiser, the old act. He did the Bernie lean at home plate. I mean, it has the same sort of thing there. Who'd have thunk it? A movie.
I think it's just the social media and the kind of pop culture connection that we all feel now, this homogenizing of experience, where you just it becomes part of your childhood or your upbringing or your life to such an extent, and you we love to forget about things and then remember them because it makes us feel like, oh yeah,
get a little nostalgic.
And then, get enough time between, you know, Dude, Where's My Car came out in 2000, you know, that's, you know, that's a while back now, thankfully. And just because it's nice to have breadth in your career. Nice
but
to
that opens some doors for him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
sure.
And that wasn't even supposed to, by the way, that wasn't supposed to be a big role. I auditioned for the Ashton part.
Wow.
And Philip Stark, who wrote it, was one of the writers from that 70s show. And I was like, there's no way Ashton's not going to be doing this character. This is just stupid. But I read for it, and they liked my read so much that he took the Zoltan character and he wrote like four other scenes to flesh out the storyline to kind of, you know, I did a lot of the exposition. Basically, I patched some holes, you know, explaining what stuff was. That's what Zoltan eventually did, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he, when I came back in, the network always likes to see somebody else. And even if he just went, this is the guy, we want him, this is great, we're happy with this. The studio always needs to see an alt just in case they have a different idea. Mm-hmm. And they brought in Bobcat Goldthwait, who I'm a huge fan of.
Did he set anything on fire?
No, he didn't. But the funny thing is, I used to do Bobcat when I was in school. Thank you very much. It's really nice to be here on the Clay Aiken Show. He's such a good singer. I hope he becomes a congressman because I would vote for Clay Aiken.
Wow, you nailed Bobcat.
Yeah, so I used to do him, and he hates the character now. He doesn't do it anymore. And so I'm sitting next to this guy who's one of my heroes who refuses to do the thing that made him my hero anymore. And I'm competing for him with him for a role that I know I'm going to get. It was the most awkward, messed up, bizarre.
I want to ask you about that. By the way, we're with Hal Sparks here, 1-800-878-PLAY. I remember hearing, you know, Ryan Gosling, he's a serious actor and, you know, beefcake guy. But he said when he was getting started out, he would go in. He would, like, pull all his emotions. He'd be doing some crying scene in an audition. A phone would ring. They'd tell him to stop. And they were like, by the way, Jared Leto has this role anyway. But keep going. And it just was what's that like when you go to these calls?
Oh, totally. There's actually sort of good news to this. And I'll tell you why. When you move to L.A., everybody says you're competing with every other actor out there. They always tell you the odds are against you. You know, and as a working actor who's still working and been working for 15 years, I'm in the upper 2% of the upper 2% of my industry just because I keep working. It's amazing and great. And I'm very grateful. And I bust my butt to keep that. But when you first moved to L.A., it was like there's 3 million actors and they're all out of work and you're competing with every single one of them. Well, that's crap because half of them are women. So I'm not competing with the women for the roles that I'm up for for the most part. In the men, a third of them are old. A third of them are children. And once you wheedle it down, some of them look like military guys. Some of them look like, you know, there's no way they're going to play the parts. And then you look up after everybody's told you you're competing with 3 million people. You see the same 8 guys at every audition. They all kind of look like you. And that's it. These are your 7 competitors.
Well, what I tell people, too, because when they say, you know, because I was told don't get into broadcasting. It's too competitive. You can't make it. And I thought, you know, everywhere you go, it's competitive. There's a pecking order for ditch diggers.
Right.
So where is there not competition? Don't let that discourage
you. And it's not indicative of anything. The statistical aspect especially a skilled labor, has nothing to do with your ability to do it, especially if it's personality-based. Because if you're the kind of person who would believe the statistics, you're not going to make it. Because there's an element of arrogance and belief in yourself that is required to have the kind of personality someone would want to listen to more than twice.
Right.
That means you don't give a crap what the statistics say about your chances. Because statistically speaking, if there were 2 other people in this room, one of us would have to be Chinese, statistically.
Mm-hmm.
But so what? If the other 2 happen to be black, we wouldn't think it was broken. We'd just go, you know, there's just not a Chinese person in the building or in this room.
Right.
So what? But if you believe in statistics more so than personality, then you're screwed. And that's, as a stand-up, I've always been arrogant and stupid enough to believe it was all about me. So, and you need that.
You have to have that cockiness.
You have to. Because confidence you get over time by working. But before you've done the work, you have to be completely full of yourself or you're never made.
You have to believe.
Yeah.
It's just, I tell this story, and I'm going to tell about me again. But when I played college football, Off the field, I knew that guy could beat me up. I knew that guy. But on the field, there's no way. I knew no one could hurt me. And if I didn't think that, I would have got
killed. You get hurt. Right.
Yeah. All right. Man, we're getting so serious. Great advice coming from you. I just want to ask you this. Hollywood, the amount of weasels and let's do lunch, all the PR people, especially people like agents who maybe they're lawyers, but they're trying to make money off your talent,
right.
Your creativity. Let me make money from that.
Sure, sure.
What is the quotient of that?
I would say it was no bigger than the sleazy, annoying middle management Peter principal jerks in a giant insurance firm, or that work for Cisco, or work for IBM, there are more facelifts in Houston than there are in Los Angeles. You know,
is that right?
Yeah, you just see them. They're big, giant ones. Like, we get tiny little tucks because, you know, everybody's cleaning themselves up because they're going to be on camera. But the big fucking, you know, inflated faces, like the funky looking noses and the big cheeks and stuff. Mm-hmm. You thought I was going to say a bad word, didn't
you? Jerry Jones.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
drastic. They look like, you know, there's more of those there. So L.A. doesn't corner the market on weasels and self-involved, you know, full of themselves people. That being said, I hope that my agent looks at me like I'm a pork chop in an old dog cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't need a friend. I've got friends. Right. I don't need my agent and my manager to be my friend. I don't need them to be the person I call in the middle of the night. I don't need bail money. I don't need them to, you know, pick up the phone when I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. I don't need any of that. I got friends for that. What I need them to look at me is I need just dollar signs. I want the meanest dogs pulling my sled. I don't care if you like me at all. As a matter of fact, if you hate me but you know I'll pay for your boat through 10% of what I make, then you're the agent for me.
I like that too. All right, I want to remind everyone, Hal Sparks will be performing at Cobb's Comedy Club. Hey, man, really good stuff.
Yeah.
Good insights. Hey,
man.
You're a smart
glad
guy.
To do it. Absolutely. Well, it's all for Clay. You know what I mean? I'll do anything for
all right.
He's obviously
Clay.
A big fan of the show.
All right. So. And Cobb's Comedy Club. And after Cobb's, where are you off to?
I'm in next week. I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm doing a show there on a week from Saturday. And then Tuesday, I'm in Orlando. First week of September, I'm in Seattle, which I love, at Parlor Live, which is a great club. And then I'm in Kentucky, middle of September, at Comedy Off Broadway.
The other day I had him in a name drop here. Melissa Etheridge was in studio.
Oh, I love Melissa. I know her very well.
Yeah, best venue, worst venue. She said best venue, Fillmore, because she had just heard about it her whole life, the whole Bill Graham thing.
Sure.
She said worst venue ever, Madison Square Garden. She was scared out of her mind that she was going to get hurt because the crowd was on top of her and so crazy. So as a comedian,
right.
And it may not be the room. It might be you. You're off that night. But where did you die and where did you kill?
I've never really died on stage ever. I've had a couple of like off shows that weren't up to par,
mm-hmm.
but I've never been booed off stage. I've never had that kind of show because
okay.
I prep. I do work. I'm a Carlin fan. I write enough stuff. I'm comfortable.
Okay.
Worst as far as best and worst venues though. Best venue, it's really hard because there's some really good ones. In Philly, there's a club called Helium that's just awesome. I just love the energy of it. And there's the main stage in Chicago, which is terrific. Cobb's is really awesome. I shot my first special here. I liked it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Worst venue, cruise ships, because it's like you've been hit in the head with a hammer because you're staggering the entire ship because the boat's moving.
Mm.
And so everybody, the people bringing the trays, audience going to and from their seat, everybody's ever so slightly drunk. It's the weirdest. So I can't show it on the radio, but it's just this constant, you know, like somebody's drunk and they're maintaining.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you look like your whole show.
Dude,
you look
maintain.
Like a maintenance drunk. You're just kind of where you're 1 foot steps behind the other to stabilize yourself every so often. It's terrible.
I heard a performer one time say about a cruise ship that he says, you're in a prison in which you might drown.
Yeah, that's a great example. That smells funny. And if somebody dies, they have a weird colloquialism because they don't want to let you know somebody died on the boat. So you'll hear an announcement. Every boat has a different one.
Code blue? Or
No. That would be too much. They do bright shining star, port side, level 5, bright shining star. Yeah, each boat has a different one. And then what they'll do is they'll clear out the four rooms on either side of the dead body, and then they'll wheel them down the hallway into the hull.
Burial at sea?
No, and they put them in the freezer. And so you'll start getting really interesting ice cream. That's how you know somebody has croaked on board. Is you're like, pistachio sorbet ripple. And you're like, because that was in the back of the freezer.
With toupee hair.
Chocolate and vanilla is in the front. They serve that all the time. But all the special flavors are in the back. But they have to scoop it all forward to put the body in there because they can't. They have to wait till they get back to the port they left to drop the body off legally because of maritime laws. So they can't just drop them off in the Caribbean at the next island.
Yeah, hey, Vancouver, here's
nope,
the body.
No, sorry. We got to go all the way back to Maine.
All right. You can follow Hal Sparks, by the way. We're running late here. At Hal Sparks. Great having you in,
yeah,
man.
Thanks.
Best of luck. And hopefully down the line we get to catch up again.
I insist.
All right. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a break. Get on back. 1-800-878-PLAY.